Iran says American and European officials and the media they support exploited a tragic incident to incite riots in the country. Israeli settlers storm Al-Aqsa Mosque in what Palestinians regard as yet another act of desecration against the holy site. The British pound plunging to a record low against the US dollar amid growing recession fears in the UK. From our Tehran headquarters, this is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Iran is denouncing the U.S. and European governments for what it calls their hypocritical support for the recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says American and European leaders and the media they support exploited the tragic incident of the death of the young woman to incite the riots. The official says that they tried their best to back rioters under the pretext of supporting the rights of Iranians. Kanani says Western governments also ignored rallies by millions of Iranians against the rioters. The spokesman urged Western governments to abandon their false slogans and rather move to end what are called cruel and inhumane sanctions against Iran. Western officials, including those in the United States, have frequently voiced support for the rioters in recent days. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has performed fresh attacks on bases of terrorist groupings in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. The artillery shelling and drone strikes were conducted by the ground force of the IRGC to hit gathering places of the terrorists and bases they use for training and operations. The IRGC employed smart and precision strike weapons in the strikes. This 2 days after the elite force shelled positions of terrorists in Iraq's Kurdistan region for their role in the recent riots in western Iranian border cities. Back then, Iran said that the operation would continue until its border areas were secured. Tehran also warned Kurdistan region's officials that it will not tolerate terrorist bases near its borders. Iranians have filled the streets across the nation to denounce the latest riots that erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Crowds of protesters rallied to denounce the desecration of sanctities and acts of vandalism during the riots. Demonstrators in Tehran issued a statement at the end of the rally. They urged the authorities to decisively deal with those breaking laws and spreading lies. The rioters blocked the streets, vandalized public property and police vehicles, and set fire to dozens of ambulances. And that followed the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini after she was taken into a police station. Tehran's police commander has rejected claims that she was physically assaulted. Officials say that Amini died of medical conditions.
It's the third time since Friday that Iranians assemble en masse to call the nation for peace. This gathering is in fact a response to days of nationwide street violence and riots that erupted in Iran following the death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman who died on September 16th, days after she was taken into a police station. The demonstrators here say while they sympathize with Mahsa's death, they don't want the violent protests to go on.
We are too waiting for the investigation to shed light on Mahsa's death. We are all saddened by her death. But unfortunately, some people are committing vandalism in the name of Mahsa. They're desecrating our sanctities in her name.
It's not about Ms. Amini. Those people who have violated law and order have used Mahsa's death as an excuse to incite unrest in our country. They have destroyed public properties and our flag, which represents our identity.
Police have rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was mistreated, saying no physical contact happened between officers and Amini. Now, violent protests and acts of vandalism come while Iranian authorities have given assurances that a thorough investigation is underway into her death. Here, people describe the rioters as foreign-backed elements who are exploiting the death of Mahsa Amini to instigate chaos and wreak havoc across the country.
I believe Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the U.S. are trying to use the issue of Mahsa Amini through their media propaganda to sow divisions among Iranians and deal a blow to the Islamic Republic. But they will never achieve their goals because our nation will stay united.
22-year-old Mahsa was an Iranian Kurd from the city of Saqqez in Kurdistan province. On September 13th, she was on a trip to Tehran with her family when she was taken by police. Police have released the CCTV footage showing Mahsa suddenly collapsing on the ground and then later being brought to an ambulance.
People here say they're all grieved for Mahsa's unfortunate fate. And they say the issue should not divide Iranians and harm national security. Yusuf Jalil, Tehran.
Official investigations into Amini's death are underway. The TV channel has also touched on criticism that Western media and politicians are propagandizing to score points against Iran. The result of the official investigations into the cause of the death is expected within days. Hundreds of Israeli settlers have stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque in what Palestinians regard as another act of desecration against the holy site. The settlers entered the compound with a backing of Israeli troops. A Zionist group had earlier announced plans to increase settlers' visits to the location this week. And that's while all such visits are banned under a 1967 agreement between Israel and Jordan, the custodian of the mosque. Now, in response, the Hamas resistance movement called on Palestinians to gather at the mosque to confront the Israeli forces and settlers. Hamas says the mosque is a red line, warning Israeli aggressions against it will eventually set fire to the entire region. The British Prime Minister is considering a controversial move to relocate Britain's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. The announcement has already angered Palestinians who have long held Al-Quds as the capital of their future state. Liz Truss has made no bones about her pro-Israel stance, but why she's putting this potential move at the top of her list is questionable, given the fact that the UK is grappling with so many economic woes at this point in time.
Indications are coming from the UK Prime Minister Liz Truss, who is considering to break with decades-old tradition and move the UK embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. This move has been strongly criticized by not only Palestinians, but the UN. A number of special rapporteurs have said relocating the British embassy to Al-Quds would break with international law and UN resolutions and reverse decades of British policy.
The capital of Israel. Thank you.
The potential move of the embassy to Al-Quds follows the footsteps of the former U.S. President Donald Trump.
President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
It also led to Palestinians' fierce condemnation, leading to protests and clashes in which Israeli forces killed dozens of Palestinians. Even the former UK Prime Minister Theresa May criticized the move at the time. Special Rapporteur focused on Palestine has said, two or more wrongs do not make a right. Acts altering character, status, the demography of Al-Quds have no legal effects and are null and void and must be rescinded. But why would the UK Prime Minister consider such a move when the UK is grappling with a series of crises which are more important for a new Prime Minister, like a cost of living crisis that has gripped the UK, getting worse by the day? Liz Truss has not hidden the fact of her pro-Israeli stance. She has said that under my leadership, Israel will have no stauncher friend in the world. That's what I've done as Foreign Secretary and Trade Secretary. I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. She also said that she would further solidify her ties with Israel by signing a free trade deal with Israel. This is interesting since she has rejected that notion with the U.S. at this point in time. Liz Truss has admitted that the UK will not strike a post-Brexit free trade deal with the U.S. for a number of years.
The relocation of embassies from Tel Aviv began with former U.S. President Trump. Other countries to have followed in Washington's footsteps are Honduras, Australia, the Czech Republic, Serbia, and Slovakia. Yet the move does nothing to solve the Palestinian issue. One reason for the embassy relocations has been the so-called normalization of ties between some Arab countries and Israel. That's another precedent set by Trump.
controversial consideration by the UK Prime Minister to move UK's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds may have been put in overdrive when Truss made this promise to Israel during her campaign to become Prime Minister. During the Tory leadership contest, she addressed this to an influential lobby group called the Conservative Friends of Israel. But who is the Conservative Friends of Israel? It is a British parliamentary group affiliated to the Conservative Party. It's dedicated to strengthening business and political ties between the UK and Israel, as well as between the British Conservative Party and the Israeli Likud Party. At one point, for example, it was accused of bankrolling the Tories, where 50% of the MPs in the shadow cabinet are Conservative Friends of Israel members. Back in 2017, secret tapes exposed the amount of Israeli influence over the UK Conservative Party. Israeli embassy linked political operators discussed taking down Foreign Minister Alan Duncan, boasting of planting parliamentary Russians.
Eloquent Labour Friends of Israel, they're trying, they want to establish a branch of the young
This expose revealed how the senior political officer at the Israeli embassy in London discussed a potential plot to take down British politicians, including a minister of state at the Foreign Office who supported Palestinian civil rights. Desmond Sway, a former Conservative minister and parliamentary aide to former Prime Minister David Cameron, described it best when he said at the time that what we cannot have is Israel acting in the UK with the same impunity that it enjoys in Palestine. Clearly, an interference in another country's politics of the murkiest and most discreditable kind. It is no secret that Israel uses its lobby power in the U.S. to have Washington make decisions in its favor, especially the powerful lobby group AIPAC. This covers things like supporting Israel at the UN, approving arms sales in the billions of dollars, to pro-Israel stance when it comes to issues like illegal settlements. Now Israel has a pro-hawkish prime minister in Downing Street that it can count on. And for as long as she is in office, Israel is making sure that she will act on Israel's behalf. It is not that far off to conclude that Truss has promised favors for Israel when it comes to the issue of doing business in exchange for Israeli investment, so that together we can create well-paid, high-value jobs in both countries, as stated by the International Trade Secretary, Anne-Marie Trevelyan. Her new tax cuts, described as trickle-down economics, was reported to disproportionately benefit the rich and make her unpopular. This may, by default, involve Israeli businesses who would warmly receive her plans to slash taxes despite the economic crisis.
British Prime Minister Liz Truss has called on London's Western allies to stay their ground against what she calls threats from Russia. In an interview with the CNN, Truss accused Russia of saber-rattling and bogus threats in the Ukraine war. She called for Western sanctions against Moscow and support for Kyiv to continue. Truss made comments after meeting with U.S. and French presidents in New York. She's taken a hard line against Russia since taking office earlier this month. Her government has also pledged $2.6 billion in military aid to Ukraine in 2023. And that's despite Moscow's warnings against Western involvement in the war. The British pound edged to a record low against the U.S. dollar as the new government's mini-budget sends shockwaves across the U.K. The pound surely sank by nearly 5% Monday to sit at its lowest ever against the dollar. The sterling then rallied to just below $1.1. That's the lowest level since 1985. The currency has been hit by a series of tax cuts and other spending measures announced by Finance Secretary Kwasi Kwarteng. He says that these will help families cope with surging energy costs, but there are fears that a multi-billion pound package would need hefty borrowing to materialize and would lead to recession. In Italy, the Democratic Party has conceded defeat in the national elections, and it says it will be the main opposition force from now on. Far-right leader Giorgia Meloni says that Italian voters have given a clear mandate to the opposition alliance to form the new government. Meloni's Brothers of Italy party secured most votes among coalition partners, which is set to win the majority in parliament. She says she'll seek to lead the next administration and will work for all Italians. Maloney is the obvious choice for prime minister, has pledged to support Western policy in Ukraine and not to take undue risks with the economy.
On Sunday, over 50 million Italians have been called to cast their ballot in what could be a pivotal election as Italy and a number of EU countries reel from repercussions of the conflict in Ukraine. The cost of energy has increased by 80% on average across the country compared to a year ago, while at the current rate, inflation is expected to reach 15% in 2023. With a growing number of Italians saying they've lost trust in politics, a high level of abstention from voting, much higher than the record low of 73% in the 2018 general elections, has been predicted.
I don't favor any of the candidates. I see little individual seriousness. As a matter of fact, I didn't want to vote at all. I only came to the polls out of my civic sense.
The electoral law must be changed. Those who deserve to rule are not rewarded. I have great distrust of the electoral system and of Italy's politics.
According to the current electoral law, which has already been reviewed twice by the Constitutional Court, citizens cannot pick their favorite candidates on the ballot. They can only vote for blocked lists. It's the parties themselves who will decide which candidates get the votes.
Last time a government was chosen by voters was 13 years ago when Berlusconi won the elections. All the elected governments that have followed have been overturned and replaced with executives of the establishment.
According to pollsters, a right-wing coalition is on course to win a comfortable majority of seats in both houses of the parliament, with the far-right Brothers of Italy party likely to win about 25% of the vote. The Democratic Party comes second with around 22% of preferences. Brothers of Italy party leader, 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni, is predicted to become Italy's first ever female prime minister, heading a coalition that features anti-immigration populist Matteo Salvini and 85-year-old media tycoon Silvio Berlusconi. Meloni's flagship policies include defending traditional social values, anti-immigration programs, and the reduction of taxes. She has been supporting sanctions against Moscow so far, while Salvini and Berlusconi have recently said they should be reconsidered. Max Civili, Rome.
And with that, we come to the end of this broadcast from Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
economic divide.
The fall of the dollar is gaining momentum. The Ukraine conflict has speeded up that process, especially since China and Russia have said that they would trade their oil in their own currencies. Given that the infrastructure is in place for the financial transactions and U.S.'s rocky economic state, will the dollar demise occur sooner rather than later? Hi, I'm Kavit Ahvai. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has said de-dollarization is inevitable. Is it? We will question that. Also, China and Russia accelerating their moves towards that. One of the consequences, a positive one for them, minimizing U.S. sanctions impacts. Also, de-dollarization contagion. The BRICS countries, they got together, the 14th session, and they said, we're going to have a new reserve currency. Also, strengthening bilateral trade in their national currencies, another move towards de-dollarization. And finally, a look at central bank reserves reducing dollars, exchanging to the yuan. Good news for China. That shows that the dollar is losing value. Saudi Arabia and Israel following suit.
The de-dollarization trend, which was in the making for years prior to the Ukraine war, has gained momentum following the latest crisis. Russia and China have decided to ditch the dollar in their bilateral trade and business ties. Beijing and Moscow have initiated programs and signed de-dollarization agreements to protect and shield their economies from U.S. governments. By 2020, less than half of bilateral trade transactions between these two countries were in dollars. This has gained pace following the recent tensions. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has recently said that the process of de-dollarization of the global economy is inevitable. Other countries are also joining the trend. Venezuela, Turkey, Pakistan, and Iran are also joining the process.
The dollar and the online reaction to what the Russian president has said overall, looking at how de-dollarization is inevitable. Responses are varied, but many, as opposed to before, are pointing to the direction of the dollar's value decreasing and for it not to have that international standing or the superior standing as it has been interpreted before. Take a look at our first post here, a U.S. CBDC, currency that's digital in nature, is being examined to help the U.S. dollar's international standing. Translation, de-dollarization, and losing the world reserve currency status. Got some gold or silver?
We're examining whether a U.S. central bank digital currency would improve upon what is an already safe and efficient domestic payment system. As our white paper on this topic notes, a U.S. CBDC could also potentially help maintain the dollar's international standing.
Next, China and Russia moving to disrupt the dollar's dominance in oil markets, where it goes on to say, this particular entry, Russia and China are making moves to dethrone the U.S. dollar in global oil markets. Russian and Chinese hydrocarbon giants Gazprom and China National Petroleum Corporation have agreed to switch payments for gas supplies to rubles. Then it elaborates more. China has long regarded the position of the renminbi, or the yuan, in the global league table of currencies as being a reflection of its own geopolitical and economic importance on the world stage. Okay, Russian companies is our next post saying that the shift to the yuan is happening as flight from dollar accelerates. Then, are you ready for the Great Reset? This was something that makes very much big news when it was announced because it is something that is a work in progress. And the WEF, or the World Economic Forum, said America's dominance is over. By the year 2030, we will have a handful of global powers. And finally, our next online post, the U.S. dollar's global standing as a top reserve currency has lost ground to China's yuan and others. So that's what we're looking at in terms of online posts, many of them pointing to the direction of the dollar's dominance nearing or reaching or accelerating towards its end. Okay, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. First up, we have Jayanth Tharapal joining us. He's the editor of the Oriental Despot website. He also has written a piece called How Declining Currency Hegemony Leads to War. All right, welcome to the program, Jayanth Tharapal, the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. Let me start with that in terms of what he has said. De-dollarization is inevitable. Now, we've heard that before, and we've heard many who have said that the dollar's international standing is not as high as it used to be. What are the reasons behind that? Are we looking at the Ukraine conflict maybe contributing to this? Because this is a stance that has happened before. How do you see the dollar standing right now?
Well, thank you for the question, Kaveh. Look, the sanctions on Russia are actually unprecedented in that the targeted country's currency is actually strengthened. This has never really happened before. Usually what happens is that the United States imposes sanctions on a country and the targeted country experiences a rapid depreciation of its own currency. But this hasn't happened with Russia, and that's because Europe needs Russian energy. Turns out that the German economy, you know, worth about $1 trillion, or the European economy worth about $1 trillion, was ultimately sitting on a foundation of something like $40 billion worth of Russian energy imports. That's how important Russia is. So without those energy imports, Europe cannot produce the high value-added manufactured goods that it's known for and that backs the value of its currency. So BRICS has expanded its trade with Russia as well, and that's the other reason why the Russian currency hasn't depreciated too much. And over the past, if we look at the long term, over the past 6 years, the composition of foreign exchange reserves data that you get from the IMF shows that U.S. dollar reserves are actually falling. So in 2016, U.S. dollar reserves were 65% of global central bank balance sheets. Now it's 58%, which is doesn't seem like much, but in the grand scheme of things, it's actually quite big, especially when you consider that 20, 30 years ago, it used to be about 80%.
Indeed. Let's find out what our guest thinks about what our guest there talked about the dollar and its dominance. Bradley Blankenship joins us. He's a Prague-based American journalist. He is also a political analyst and a freelance reporter. Well, Bradley, welcome. Taking a look at what our guest there said in terms of the standing of the dollar, he talked about Russia. Russia is part of the BRICS summit. I'm sorry, BRICS grouping of countries, of which the summit was just held, the 14th one. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are the members. And the Russian president announced about this intention to develop a new international currency, a reserve currency, to target the U.S. dollar status. Is that going to work? Because we're looking at a grouping of countries, and perhaps this is something that may spread to other countries.
Yeah, that's right. So the leaders talked about creating a basket of their currencies to use in international transactions instead of the dollar. And I think because, you know, if you look at how important these countries are, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and then, of course, you have other countries like Argentina now wanting to join BRICS. Maybe Saudi Arabia is going to join BRICS. This represents a real serious challenge, like a serious alternative to the dollar, because these are very important countries. And I think that these countries will become even more important. The thing is that the global south is going to be, in the next few decades, the hub of global development. You're going to see the most GDP growth in these countries. It's going to be, the best investment opportunity. And so I think that these currencies will be more valuable and more lucrative to trade in. And certainly, as I said before, how the U.S. dollar was the lubricant of the global economy. I think you'll see that these currencies will be even more important as there's more investment in these countries. And then, of course, more cooperation between them.
It's time now for our InfoNews section of the program. This is where we review news from around the world with an economic flavor. First up, we take a look at a summit by the name of SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, in which Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, called on SCO to confront U.S. unilateralism through new approaches, something he said at this summit. Now, one of the solutions, sustainable trade between the SCO members through joint development of infrastructure such as financial transactions. Note, financial transactions, very important because they would like to sway away from the dollar, which is the topic of our program. All right, next up, there's been a seizure by Germany. What has occurred? Well, the country has seized control of Russian oil refineries, and that's big news for Germany in a sense. but yet the confrontation escalates with Russia. The move of Germany is aimed at ensuring the operation of three local Rosneft facilities after service providers allegedly refused to work with the Russian company. Next up, U.S. targeting Russia, nothing new there, but this target is about banks using Russian payment systems. How has it done that? Well, Russian banks have issued more than 120 million Mir cards. So the cards that it has issued based on the Mir system, the financial system that Russia uses in any shape or form for the U.S. is obviously off limits for anybody using that. So the U.S. is after any entity, organization, corporation, et cetera, that is using Russia in any shape or form. And finally, taking a look at the next piece of news is something that we perhaps are a bit surprised, but yet it shouldn't be. That's about how there has been a new pipeline that is now going to be executed, in which Moscow has unveiled this new gas pipeline, which is going to be going to China. It's called the Soyuz Vostok in terms of the project itself, and it is expected to deliver 50 billion cubic meters of natural gas annually. The question is, whatever happened to the other pipeline that goes to Europe, for example? What's going to happen to that? Well, that's a question that only time will tell. Well, those were some of the stories that we thought were important for this past week. It's time now for an in-depth section of the program. The standing of the U.S. dollar may be something that has been somewhat or more or less stable throughout the years and even decades. But things like the Ukraine conflict have pushed that and accelerated its standing on the declining side. That's what we're going to try to reveal to you in this in-depth section. First, the U.S. dollar's global standing. Well, it was the top reserve currency. However, it has lost ground. It has lost ground to, for example, the Chinese yuan. The currency basket of the IMF actually has five currencies, but the Chinese yuan is coming out pretty strong these days. However, we're still looking at a ways to go because you also have the euro trailing behind the dollar. But the dollar standing is gradually coming down and decreasing. Next up, our focus is on central banks. Now, this is very important in terms of the central bank's reserves in dollars. Now, that is down to 59%. Now, it used to be above 65%. According to one of our guests in this program, it was at around 80% at some point. But that has gone down. Why has it gone down? One particular instant changed all of that, and that was when the U.S. reached out and confiscated the Russian dollar reserve currency held at central banks, which made other countries think twice about holding reserves actually in dollars. One of them, the Israeli Central Bank. For example, when you take a look at U.S.'s staunchest ally, Israel, well, it has actually added the Chinese yuan for the first time, okay? This is the first time ever, while cutting its dollar holdings. This is the biggest currency reshuffle that has happened in at least a decade. So there, it shows you how the dollar's standing, or value, I should say, has fallen. Then comes the issue of oil trade in dollars. Of course, when we talk about oil, we have to talk about Saudi Arabia. Yes, Saudi Arabia is considering trading oil in yuan. That could be going on without them wanting this to be leaked out. Of course, that'd be kind of tough. But at this point, it is definitely on the table and in Saudi Arabia's cards for it to trade oil in the yuan. Keep in mind on the side note that China and Russia are actually going to go ahead with that. Actually, it's not a side note. It's coming up next in terms of our look at the dollar's demise, in a sense. China and Russia, to disrupt this dollar dominance, how are they doing that? Well, they're going to do it in the oil markets, obviously. And the way they've gone forward to do that, they've agreed to switch payments for gas supplies to rubles. China's renminbi is also reflective of Chinese geopolitical importance because China also wants its currency, the renminbi, or the yuan, as it is said, to gain value throughout this whole process. So those were some of the angles in this in-depth look to show how the dollar is decreasing in its dominance or in its value, in a sense. Well, let's bring in have our guests rejoin us on this in this particular question. First, we have Jan Tharpal, who runs the Oriental Despot website, joining us. He also is the author of How Declining Currency Hegemony Leads to War. Well, Jayanth Tharpal, welcome back. Countries holding foreign currencies in reserve is what my focus is here. And we're looking at how Russia's $640 billion U.S. dollars was actually confiscated by the U.S. in terms of the sanctions imposed, and that obviously put a lot of countries' doubt into holding the dollar in U.S. currencies, like Saudi Arabia, who's thinking of selling oil in the yuan, and also Israel, which for the first time cut its dollar holdings in the biggest currency reshuffle. What does this show when two of U.S.'s closest allies are doing this?
Well, it's not a surprise that Israel would sell off its dollars and buy some Chinese yuan or renminbi, as it's called. And that's because Israel has always been less loyal to the United States than the United States has been to Israel. Israel is a country that has in the past sold U.S. military secrets directly to China. So holding their currency is not that egregious an affront to the United States compared to what they've done in the past. As for Saudi Arabia, this is a big deal. It's a very big deal. Sometime in the past 10, 12 years, I can't remember, China became a bigger importer of Saudi oil than Western countries combined. And so this is such a major problem for the United States is because the oil that Saudi Arabia exports to world markets is what upholds the value of the U.S. dollar because of the petrodollar system. Saudi Arabia, as a part of OPEC, since 1975, has priced oil in dollars. Now it's negotiating with China to price its oil in yuan. And so if Saudi Arabia moves ahead with these plans, then it's going to mean that countries around the world are going to be looking towards their exchange rate with the Chinese yuan in order to import the oil that they need from Saudi Arabia. And this is going to reduce the demand for U.S. dollars, which means more inflation for the U.S.
All right, very well. Bradley Blankenship rejoins us now. Bradley Blankenship is the Prague-based American journalist and political analyst and freelance reporter. Bradley, welcome back. Taking a look at the Russian President Vladimir Putin, we said this before in the program about how he has said that the process of de-dollarization is actually inevitable. So when he talks that way, he has said that before, along with many other analysts, financial advisors, investment bankers, etc. The camp that exists out there in terms of how de-dollarization is inevitable. How true do you think that is? I mean, we're looking at how one of the things that Washington is being critiqued about is how it's bullying other countries, whether it's through sanctions or its foreign policy. I mean, do you think this dollar de-dollarization is actually in motion, maybe even faster?
So I think that the current economic situation opens up a very interesting opportunity for de-dollarization. And that's particularly because I think that the situation that we have now is very similar to the one that we had in the 1970s, where there was this mix of inflation and recession that's called stagflation. So this is when the economy is contracting and then real wages are declining through inflation. And the solution to this problem at the time was neoliberal capitalism, globalization. And this was, you know, the Chinese jumped on board with this. And essentially, what happened was America was bailed out by investments in the global south, namely China. And now that we're having basically the same situation again, the United States is not investing in the global south, but China, Russia, other countries are. And now you see more of a multipolar world order coming out of this. The U.S. dollar during the previous period, the 1970s and 1980s, was the lubricant that created the situation that was globalization. But now the U.S. dollar is kind of a political weapon. It's a blockade against this. It's against globalization. And in my opinion, and I think probably most economists would agree, is that the process of globalization cannot be reversed. It has already happened. It's a permanent feature of the economy. And so essentially the conclusion is that the U.S. dollar is proving itself to be against globalization. And that's why I think that the present time, with all of the inflationary pressures, the recessions that we see around the world, now is a very opportune time for the U.S. dollar to be dethroned.
BRICS countries, which include BRICS Summit in Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, have decided to develop a new international reserve currency. The move is intended to target the U.S. dollar status as the world's premier currency.
There are other factors at play as well. We're shifting from a banking settlement system to a digital settlement system. This will also change how payments are made, and it will take away the central role of the U.S. dollar. And this will change the nature of the global settlements or monetary system.
Now appears that the U.S. dollar will still be a global currency, but will lose its supremacy as a trading currency. That will erode the U.S. ability to use the dollar as a bargaining tool.
Ever since the war erupted in Ukraine, global geostrategic and geopolitical alliances have reshaped international politics. Countries are beginning to find new partners and join new alliances. The war prompted the West to impose sanctions on Russia, and Moscow has intoned and launched an energy war on the U.S. and its allies. Amid these raptures, one key question has dominated political debates about the future of global economy, the fate of the U.S. dollar in global trade. A little bit of historical outlook is helpful here. Based on Bretton Woods Agreement signed in 1994, gold was the basis for the U.S. dollar, and other currencies were pegged to the U.S. dollar's value. The Bretton Woods Agreement was also created to create two important organizations. It led to these two important organizations, actually, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and the World Bank. But by the 1970s, President Richard Nixon announced an end to the agreement, practically terminating Washington's commitment to exchange gold for U.S. currency. That gave the United States a huge advantage. Washington could now use its own currency as the global currency without having to peg it against the value of global. That paved the way for the global dominance of the U.S. dollar. The United States could now print money to boost its own economy at the expense of other countries. But things have begun to change. High inflation rates in the United States have weakened the U.S. dollar. Furthermore, Washington's weaponization of its currency has prompted other countries to move away from the U.S. dollar.
I spoke to you about the national energy crisis and our policy for meeting it. Tonight, I want to talk with you again.
That does it for this segment of the program. Please send us any comments or thoughts you have on whether it was useful or not.
When it comes to the subject of the dollar, whether it's a demise conversation that's being held, or whether the fall of the dollar in terms of its value is being discussed, there's one thing for sure. The geopolitics of the world have changed. We're looking at Russia, China, Iran, Venezuela, countries that hold almost a half of the world's oil reserves. These countries in one camp, and the thought of Saudi Arabia says they are contemplating trading oil in the yuan, for example, is going to definitely have the dollar take a hit. As to how much that will increase the fall of the dollar, only time will tell. It will happen sooner than later. That does it for this edition of the program. It was great having you with us. Questions, comments, suggestions, or critiques, do let us know. From me, Kaveh Taghlia, and the team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
for humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program for humanity. We were talking about the human being and what makes human beings different from other creatures. And one of the differences is that we can carry responsibilities and duties while other creatures can't. But in order for us to carry our duties and responsibilities, there are certain things that we need to have. First, we need to have maturity. We need to have insanity. We need to be able that we are aware of the laws that are enacted upon us and obligations and knowledge. One more thing that we also need in order for us to carry the duties towards Allah and towards ourselves and towards other fellow human beings, we have to also be physically and mentally strong. We need to have physical and mental strength. Now, with mental strength and physical strength, duties which are laid upon us should be in an agreement with, but not beyond, physical and mental strength. In another word, since man's capacities are infinite, he should be made duteous only within the limit of his capacities. For instance, he is able to acquire knowledge, but on a limited scale, so far as time and the scope of learning are concerned. Human beings, even geniuses, have to attain successive level of knowledge gradually and over the course of time. So there are limitations. Yes, in terms of learning, I can learn so much. But when it comes to my capacities are limited. You know what I mean? So I can only learn with the time I have and the brain capacity that I have. Beside that, I cannot learn more. So, for example, I cannot expect a child to learn, for example, a very in-depth Islamic laws or maths formulas or physics or chemistry. It's just not logical. One could say, yeah, but he has a capacity. Brain-wise, he has a brain. But it needs development, it needs time, it needs to be gradual. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in order for me and you to carry out these duties, we have to be mentally ready for them. An individual may, however, be promoted to do this earlier than normal to engage in something beyond normal human toleration. He may be obliged to acquire all branches of knowledge and learnings as well. These extraordinary fetuses may be possible, but not just and wise authority would propose them. It is written in the Quran that Allah says, God, do not burden any soul beyond its power. This implies that we must, for example, save a sinking man if we are able to do so. But there is no must when we are unable to prevent an airplane from crashing. We would be rebuked by God for failure in this regard. So obviously, it's very simple, very straightforward. I love to help if I have the capacity and the ability to help. If I can't, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will not hold me accountable for not being able to help. Before we continue, let's take a short break and then we will continue.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. So we're talking about being able mentally and physically to carry out the duties and responsibilities laid upon us by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Here again, as in the case of knowledge and awareness, a significant point should be borne in mind. Namely, the lack of ability does not serve as a fair pretense to remain silent and empathetic. We have to strengthen ourselves on some occasion, as Islamic teachings recommend, that to the reinforcements against governments and tyrants is a legitimate, and the acquisitions of power is illegitimate. So because I find myself unable to fight, for example, it does not mean I should keep my mouth shut. It does not mean that I should back off. It does not mean that I should not say anything. For example, when we look at Karbala and Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, one man's army, an army of 72 men and women and children, standing against an entire empire, not one, not two, not a thousand, but thousands. He could have said, I don't have the physical capacity nor the mental capacity to fight an entire civilization, an entire ummah, an entire nation, an entire army. Simple. An entire empire. No, but he said, Imam Hussein said, I have the capacity to speak out and to fight with whatever I have to make a statement. So we can't always use that as an excuse not to go and fight the tyrant governments and people who take power by force. We have to say something. We have to stand. So in terms of mental capacity and mental physical capacity, when it comes to things that we are required to do, but we are unable to do them. Like the example we gave front to, you love to save human beings. If someone is drowning, we would save him. But if a plane is crashing down, coming down, and you want to save the people, it's impossible. You just can't. You just don't have that Superman strength to fly and hold the plane from crashing. So we have to keep that in mind when it comes to mental strength and mental power. Suppose we are dealing with a stubborn and powerful enemy who intends to violate our rights or to attack the territory of a Muslim land. And suppose that we are at the moment too weak to defend ourselves. Any effort on our part would be entailed a serious loss, and no positive result will be gained now or in the future. In such a case, it is obvious that we are unable to resist such a strong foe, but at the same time, we are obliged to strengthen ourselves and our forces rather than losing our spirit and remain inactive. If I find myself weak to say something, to do something now, it means we need to work together. We need to come together. We need to create a strong force, a strong power, and fight back. Allah says, وَأَعَدُّ لَهُمْ مَسَطَعْتُمْ, and gather yourselves. Bring whatever you have and enforce it. So we can't say, well, I can't, therefore we sit. No, we have to strengthen ourselves. We will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala محمد وآله.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.